Okay, Rabbi, so we'll get started. We're on the Vav Amud Beis. Finishing up here, we're going to go on to Daf Zayin Amud Aleph very shortly. Mirtz Hashem, Omer Rav Nachman. So let's count down in the wide lines. It's about 8-9 lines down. Omer Rav Nachman, Edus Miyuchedes Kshera B'dini Momnus. So if you recall, Edus Miyuchedes means that one witness saw it from one window, from one vantage point, and the other from the other, and they didn't see each other. And the Gemara derives from a pasuk. If you look at the second line in the Gemara, Minayim le'edus miyuchedes shipsula shenemar lo yumas al pi eid echad. So you want to underline the word lo yumas, because what Rav Nachman is telling us is that since that pasuk is addressing a case of capital punishment, therefore edus miyuchedes is unacceptable. But in other testimonies, for example, in the case of Didi Mominis, there is no halacha of a psul, of a disqualification of edus miyuchedes. So for example, if I claim that you borrowed $1,000 from me, and I have two witnesses to testify, and the witnesses saw the halva, they saw the loan take place from different vantage points, they weren't even aware one of the other, nevertheless Rav Nachman would insist that those two witnesses form a kat. In this case, you come dover, they could testify and support my claim against you to pay me $1,000. So that's what Rav Nachman says, that edus miyuchedes ksherub dini mominis, because the original pasuk that establishes the disqualification of edus miyuchedes is lo yumas al pi eid echad. And since it says lo yumas, is that a case of dini nefashos? Bedini nefashos hu diena ksherah, aval bedini mominos ksherah. So we can accept edus miyuchedes in dine mominos. Now what I'd like to present to you is a sugya in Sanhedrin on Daf Lamed, and then we'll immediately come back to our sugya here. In Sanhedrin Daf Lamed, the Gemara records a machlokes tanoim about the following case. Let's say that Reuven, one of the Eidim, testifies that the halva took place on Sunday. And Shimon says that the halva took place on Monday. Correct? So they're testifying on a halva, and in both cases the sum is identical, and the malv and the lov are identical. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha says we can add these two Eidim together, form a kat, and force Reuven to pay Shimon. Again, he doesn't pay him twice, he'll pay him only once. But since both Edim are testifying that Reuven owes Shimon $1,000, even though each one is testifying about a different Maisal Vod took place in a different time, nevertheless we can combine the two. That's the sheet of Rabbi Shua ben Karach. And the Chachamim disagree. The Chachamim say, Li'olam ein edusa mitztarefes ad sheyiru shneim keechad. What does it mean, ad sheyiru shneim keechad? It means that they both have to testify on the same day. Meaning, not the same day in court, I'm talking about on the halva about the same day, correct? And the state, now we'll come back to our Rav Nachman, edus miyuchedes ksheira b'dini mominus, I mean, according to the Shita Rabbi Shua ben Karcha in Sanhedrin Daf Lamed, forget about Edus Miyuchedes. I mean, they're talking about seeing, witnessing the Alva on two different days. You know, Edus Miyuchedes is when they saw the same action at the same time, but they didn't see each other. So the Ritva points out here that this statement of Rav Nachman is only relevant to the Chachamim of Yeshua ben Karcha. Chachamim of Yeshua ben Karcha say, Ad Sheyiru Sheyidu Ke'echad, in other words, they saw the same alva on the same day. Now the question is, do they have to be aware of each other? And what if it's Eidus v'Yuchedus, they don't see each other? On that, Rav Nachman comes to tell us that since it's Dini Bominus, and there the Pasuk doesn't say Lo Yumas, therefore we can be Mitzarif, these two Eidim form a Kahal. So that's point number one that I wanted to share with you. You'll see this Chiddush also in the Tosus Shants, okay, one of the Baliyat Tosus here. Now I want to show you Tosus Dibur HaMaskil Bidini. That's the last Tosus on the Omer. Hiksha Rabbeinu Avram Yerolaynish. The HaKrovim Nafgalon Dipsulim. What's the source for the Psul of Krovim? From whence do we derive that Krovim cannot testify neither for each other nor even against each other? Mi lo yumsu avos albonim. Now notice that pasuk lo yumsu avos albonim specifically addresses the case of dinei nefashos lo yumsu, and yet the Gemara derives that the same principle that a karav is pasuliyedus applies to dinei mamonos. Gamrina mine we derive it the chsiv from a different pasuk mishpat echad yelachem. So it means that there's a pipeline, an open communication between dinei nefashos and dinei mamonos as far as edus is concerned. And if that applies to Krovim, insofar as Krovim are Psulim, Im kein achinami neilif mamonos minefashos lahach milsim de'edus miucheres psula. Why not extend and apply that principle of mishpat echad yelachem to the psul of edus miucheres? If the Torah disqualifies edus miucheres where the edim didn't see each other, as far as dinei nefashos is concerned, based on this pasuk, Yumas Alpi Eid Echad, let's apply that same psul to dinei nefashos through the principle of Mishpat Echad Yilachem. That's Tosus Kash. So it seems that what we need in order to answer Tosus' question is some system or some set of rules that govern this Mishpat Echad Yilachem. Meaning, when do we apply the laws of Eidus in the Nefashos to the laws of Eidus in Mamonos, and when we do not? You've got to come up with some rule of thumb that's got to give us a logical basis. V'nira says Tosfos the following. The Al-Karchach Haikra Lav B'dini Mamonos Kai the Eid Echad Moil Le'Mamon D'Lishvua Mia Isa. Does anybody know what Tosus is trying to tell us here? Why Tosus is going to say, why is it logically that we should limit the psul of Eidus Miuchedes to Dini Nefashos? Logically, we should not extend it and apply it to Dini Mamonos. What's fundamentally different about Eidus and Dini Nefashos as opposed to Dini Mamonos?
We're always going to be latil to.
No, I'm saying, read the Torah. First you have to...
Mamonos, an Eid Echad has relevance.
Correct, excellent. There's a certain status, an Eid Echad is meaningful in Mamonos. An Eid Echad in Dini Mamonos is totally meaningless. But in Dini Mamonos, we accept the Eidus of an Eid Echad, at least as far as what? Achiv Shmu is concerned. So if Reuven says to Shimon, you owe me 1,000, and Shimon denies it, and Reuven invites an Eid Echad to testify on his behalf, then based on the testimony of one Eid, Shimon, the Nitba, will have to take a Shmu. And perhaps Tosus is saying something even more. It's not that the Eid Echad in Dini Mamonos testifies on a Chiyuv Shvuah. That's not so. I mean, the Eid Echad is not coming to say that Shimon has to take a Shvuah. That's not the substance of his Eidus. He's testifying that Shimon owes Reuven money. So his Eidus is Eidus on Mama. The Chiddush of the Torah is that insofar as there's only one Eid, the Shvuah that the Nitba takes is a Hakchasha against the Eid. And now we weigh and we balance. On the one hand is the testimony of the Eid Echad, on the other hand is the Shvuah that contradicts the Eid Echad, and in such a case we end up in a sort of a teku, we don't know what to do, it's Yeshava B'Shava, and therefore we say Amotzi Mechaver L'Varaya, we cannot force the Nitba to pay in such a case. But basically, fundamentally, the Eidus of the Eid Echad is Eidus on Mamon. In fact, I once heard from my Rebbe that you can be mazim in Eid Echad in Mamon, and the Din HaZoah would apply. What does that mean? L'maisa, we can't make the eid echad kashuzom into a shvua, but what we can do is we can be mechayev and malchus. And we've had many cases where you can't apply kashuzom literally, but instead we apply the law of im ben hakus harosha, we give him 40 malchus. So it's clear to me that the thrust of the eidus in eid echad in mammon is not eidus on a shvua. He's not testifying in a chiv shvua, he's testifying in a chiv mammon. The Torah is mechadish that he won't be able to successfully be mechayev at mammon if he's contradicted by a shvua. Now what happens if the nitbar refuses to take the shvua? He has to pay. That's called mitok sheni rotsa lishama mishal. And that's all sugyo to itself. But if he doesn't take the shvua, he pays. Why does he pay? Because of the Eidus of Eid Echad. Says Tosus. When the Torah passes Eidus Miuchedes, the reason for that is because each Eid unto himself is meaningless. He has no status, he has no power. And therefore we need a Mitzarev to combine them and join them into one path so that they'll have the status of Eidim. That's only in Dinei Nefashos. Because in Dinei Nefashos, the testimony of one Eid is worthless. But in Dini Mamonos, where the Torah accepts the Eidus of one Eid on Mamon, albeit the Nidbak can be Machish, excuse me, with the Shvua, but the thrust of the Eidus is Nemonis on a Chiyuv Mamon, here we don't need the Mitzarev to join the two Eidim together, that they saw each other, and if they didn't, there's a Psul of Eidus Miuchas. But if you ask another question, and that is, who can qualify as a witness? Who's kashal yedus and who's pasul? And the Torah says layumsu amos albanim, and the Torah therefore reveals to us that a karov is pasul yedus, he's disqualified. That halacha through the mechanism of mishpat echad yilachem will be transferred from, will be applied from dini nefashos over to dini mominus, because here we're dealing with the fundamental issue about who qualifies for yedus and who doesn't. So that's, I think, the meaning of this Tosus. Maskifla Rav Zutra asks Akasha, Elameata, according to your logic, if Eidus Miuchedes is acceptable in Dine Mamonos, and we can join together the two Eidim, and once we join together the two Eidim, we testify that the Malva is correct and the Lov has to pay the Malva, that's based on this siruf of two Eidim again, because if there was only one Eid against the Lover, then the Lover would take a Shavuot to be Machish the Eid. But now that there are two Eidim, because Eidus Miuchedes is Kshera, and that's the Chiddush according to Chachamim. Remember, the Chachamim in Sanhedrin required that both Eidim testify on the same, about the same Halva, at the same time, in the same day, but they don't have to see each other, says Rav Nachman. Oh, the Gemara says, if that be the case, is Bedinei Nefashos Tatzil. And here, Aaron, we're going to rely on your principle of trying to save the Nidon, the Tzilu Ha'eda, to do everything that we have in our power to save the Nidon. Meaning, to suspend, or shall I say, not implement the death penalty. The Torah says, V'Tzilu Ha'eda. We have to do whatever we can to try to save the life of someone who may or may not be guilty of a crime. And what we can do is, and here's the paradox, by joining the two Eidim together and forming one cat, we can now be matzil someone. Now, that sounds counterintuitive, because if you join the two Eidim together, then l'chori you're putting someone to death, right? But where, in what situation, by joining Eidim together, can we save someone? No, good, that's good. Okay, in Zonim. Yeah, we'll get to Karav Apostle in a minute. But let's take the case of Zonim. Right? If you take a look at Rashi says the following. Bedini Nefashos, Kishishnaim Roi Michalon Zeh, Ushnaim Michalon Zeh. Let's say you have two Kitei Eidim. Right, this was the case in our Mishnah. So you have four Eidim, but two sort from this window and two from another window. V'huzma kat achas. So if you're going to separate these two kitos as separate independent kitos, then the Hazama will apply to one kat. We'll put those two Eidim to death, and then we'll put the Nidon to death based on the testimony of the other two Eidim. But if we can link up these two pairs of Eidim, and there was only Hazama once again against two out of the four, then there's Halach of Achi Yazuma Kulam, then we're going to be able to save the Zoramim. Then Rashi adds two more words. The Es HaNidon. Not only will we save the Zoramim, but we're going to save the Nidon as well. And now, Jonathan, comes your principle of what? Nimtzecha Mekar Apostle. Meaning that once we link all these Eidim together, and although, again, we can't punish the Eidim under the law of Eidim Zom because of the principle of Achi Yazumu Kulam, but we definitely believe the second pair of Eidim against the first pair of Eidim, which means the first pair of Eidim purging themselves, and therefore they are psulim, they now possibly the other two Eidim if you mitzarif them together. But wait a second, I don't get it. Who gives you the right to be mitzarif them together? Eidus Miyuchedus is psula b'dinei mamana, b'dinei nefashos. Ah, if it was an absolute rule, if it was true straight across the board, if the Torah says we can never be mitzarif Eidim, if they're miyuchedus, if they don't see each other, then you're right. We would not be able in any way, shape, or form to be mitzarif the Eidim if they don't see each other. But the Torah itself allows you to be mitzarif these two Eidim according to Rav Nachman, even though they don't see each other. In what context? In what case? In Dini Mominus. Oh, if in Dini Mominus we could be mitzarif them together. In other words, the Torah really believes these two Eidim and forms a kat that's reliable, and based on this tziruf, even though they didn't see each other in Dini Mominus, we're going to force Shimon the Lover to pay $1,000 or $1 million to Ruben the Malveh. So the Torah absolutely trusts and relies on the testimony of two Eidim, even though they didn't see each other. Then, when it comes to Eidus Miyuchedus as a psul in Dini Nefashos, we should be very limited in how we apply that psul. And we should say the following. Let's apply that psul when it works under the principle of Veshavtu Eidu Vitzilu Eidu to save the Nidon. But when the principle of Veshavtu Eidu Vitzilu Eidu tells me that we have to be mitzarif the Eidim, on the contrary, we have to link them together, then that's exactly what we should do. Again, let's go back. Before Rav Nachman came to the scene of the crime, before he stepped out, you know, frontal stage, we thought that the Torah was saying if Eidus Miyuchedus is unreliable, that's not something that the Torah would consider crossing the threshold of credibility. The laws of credibility require that the two Eidim come together as one, not only in the Haggadah Eidus, right, Tokedei Dibur that we've discussed about, but even in the seeing, the witnessing of the Eidus. And if they didn't see each other, you know what? They're separate Eidim. They're totally unreliable. You don't have a kat. If that's what's being said, then I have to apply that to Dina Nefashos straight across the line, from beginning to end. But now Rav Nachman comes to the scene, and he says, no, the Torah is perfectly happy and reliant upon two witnesses, even if they didn't see each other. And their testimony is 100% invincible, it's credible, you can rely on it. But what? Let's passel these Eidim on a technical in the case of Dini Nefashos. Says the Gemara, and that's the argument here of Rav Zutra, if you're telling me it's only a technical, then maybe we should apply that technical within the context of a super overriding rule that applies to the Nefashos. Namely, what? V'shavtu ha'eda v'tzilu ha'eda. Then we're going to utilize, you know, we're going to utilize this rule of a technical psul of Eidus Miyuchedus when we need to. There's going to be an agenda here. We have a political agenda. Our goal is to save the Nidon. But even though the Eidus is reliable, the Torah says, you know what, save the Nidon, spare him. So in a classical case, you have two witnesses testifying against Reuven and he killed Shimon. Why not rely on these two Eidim, even if they didn't see each other? And the answer is, because there's a technical psul of Eidus Miyuchedus. And that's going to save the Nidon. V'shavtu Eidu v'tzilu. But in a case where, if we suspend the psul of Eidus Miyuchedus, on the contrary, we link together the Eidim into one kat, we're going to save, and Rashi says not only save the Eidim because it's Achi Yazumas Kulam, so those Eidim who became Zoamim will not will be spared the punishment, the capital punishment of Kasher Zoma. And to boot, we're going to spare the Ninon of his death penalty, because we have two Eidim out of four Eidim that apostle, and therefore it's an Nimtzach of Emkar of apostle. In such a case, let's go back to the fundamental rule that Eidus Miuchedus is reliable, and we saw that in the breakthrough revolution of Mar Zutra. I'm sorry, of Rav Nachman, get the names confused, of Rav Nachman, when Rav Nachman postulated that in Dini Mominus, the Torah relies on Tui. You see, the Gemara never suggests the possibility that the standards of credibility are higher in Dine Nefashis than they are in Dini Mominus. Mishpat Echad Yielachem, Dini Mominus, and Dini Nefashis, it's all the same. If the Torah passes an aid in Dini Nefashos, it passes the aid in Dini Mominus. If the Torah is Machshir in aid, then the aid should be kosher. And once you see that the Torah was Machshir Eidus Miuchedes and made him into one cat, and relied on him to be Motzi Mamon Michezkoso and forced Shimon to pay Reuven, then that means that there's an absolute credibility for these two Aiden. And the truth of the matter is that's what we would sense intuitively. Correct? It's intuitively, absolutely logical that we should accept the Eidus even though they didn't see each other. So therefore, Rav Sutra asks, let's apply the principle of Psul Eidus Miuchedes within a limited context only when the Tzach HaKol, the end result, is beneficial under the rule of the Hitzilu Hitzilu HaEidus.
So how does that play out exactly? If you have two cops,
yeah,
we're both coming against the guy, and all of a sudden we find one person in one pair of these two cops to be Karva Puzzle, to be Karva.
And these two keepers didn't see each other.
Exactly. So does that mean like, oh, wait a second, he's Karva? Oh wait, let's combine them really quickly, and then he's Karva, and then we'll cancel it? Is that...
Right, and that's what Rav Zutra is saying, because Rav Zutra is saying that since there's no reason not to combine them, except for some sort of technical, but that technical should be viewed within the context of Hatzolah. Let's use Hatzolah now and combine the Eidim, and therefore, since there's one rat and apple, he's going to spoil the entire bunch.
So that means you can put it on pause, basically?
I wouldn't say on pause. We're going to have to check out every case, and we're going to calculate what's in the best interest of saving lives. For the sake of saving lives, does it make sense to combine the witnesses, or does it make sense to separate the witnesses? Whatever gives you the maximum benefit of the Tzilu Ha'eda, that's what we're going to do. And what is our answer to Rav Zutra's question? Nothing. Kasha. So already the Rishonim talk at great length, what's the difference between Tuvta and Kasha? You know, Tuvta means forget it, what you said was absolutely wrong. Kasha means we have a question, we'll have to find an answer. I didn't see an answer, I don't have one. But nevertheless, l'halacha l'maisa, we actually paskin like Rav Nachman, that Eidus Miuchedes is only disqualified in Dinei Nefashos, but in Dinei Mominos, we will accept Eidus Miuchedes. Now I need your help here to open up a Chumash. Because I want to share with you a fascinating question of the Aruch HaNer. Can somebody open up a Chumash to Dvarim Yud Tes? I think it's Parsha Shoftim. Pasuk Tes Vav. Do you have it? 1915. What does it say there? Now notice here that the word Misa does not appear. And also it says Al Pishnaim Adim or Shloshim Yakum Dover. Yakum Dover is referring to what? Anybody know? Now what area of judiciary activity of the courts? It's Dine Mominos. The Yakum Dover is Dine Mominos. So we're dealing with the case of Dine Mominos, and yet the Torah says, Lo Yakum Eid Echad Be'ish. Now, what is that telling you? That you can't rely on one aid? Well, the Pasuk itself finishes and says, Al Pishnayim Eidim O Shloshim Dvar Eidim Yakum Dover. Says the Aruch HaNer, once again, we should apply the hermeneutic logic that the Gemara applied in the name of Rav on the second line of our Gemara. The same drasha should apply. Right? What was the Gemara's drasha? Minayin latest view chedeshi psula shenemar lo yomus al pi eid echad my eid echad ilim eid echad mamish ni reisha shaminili al pi shnayim eidim. The Torah has already established explicitly that we need two eidim, and less than two eidim will not do it. So why does the Torah say, therefore, lo yomus al pi eid echad? The answer is that eid echad doesn't mean one eid. Eid echad means eidus miyuchedus, two eidim that weren't aware of each other, eid eid. Says the Aruch HaNer, this pasuk that we're looking at now, again, we're fast-forwarding from Perek Yud Zayin of Dvarim, which is a pasuk that Rav darshens, to Perek Yud Tes of Dvarim, is referring to Dinei Momonos, and once again, the words lo yakum eid echad are completely superfluous, because again we know already that you need two eidim al pi shnayim eidim yakum dover. Then it must be that eid echad is referring to eidus miyuchedes. So how can the Gemara postulate, how can Rav Nachman present the thesis that in Dinei Momonos eidus miyuchedes is kshera, the same exact drasha on the pasuk in Dvarim Yud Zayin that the Gemara darshins, we can darshin here on the pasuk in Perek Yud Tes? Says the Aruch HaNer, "Efshar lomar shekavanas hakasuk kipshuto shel yakum eid echad mamish." We're going to interpret this pasuk in Dvarim Yud Tes literally, that when the Torah says lo yakum eid echad b'ish, it means literally one eid. V'hutzrach lazeh, and we still have a chiddush. Kidei ledayek sherak lechol avon lechol chatas hu dieno kam. Avol kam hu lishvua. And that's a sugya masech teksubis on daf pei zayin amid beis. Meaning that the power of an eid echad to testify in dini mamas and engender a chiv shvua is derived from this pasuk. So the pasuk is not referring to two eidim that saw the halva, the loan from two different vantage points. It's referring to one eid and one eid only who came to testify. And what the Torah is saying is that lo yaku made echad lo chal avon lo chal chatos, but l'shvua he's meaningful. And then al pishnayim eidim yaku dover means that the lover, the mitzvah, will pay based on the testimony of two eidim. Rashi, as we said before, says that if we would be mitzaref the two pairs of eidim that saw it from two different vantage points, as Rav Zutra asked in his attack against Rav Nachman, then not only would be able to save the eidim zonim, but we'd also be able to save the nidon through the principle of nimtza echem mem karf apostle. The Ramban goes ballistic. Impossible. He says that nimtza echad mem karv apostle only applies when the eidim in fact saw the crime, and one of them, or more than one, were apostle, or karv. Then we throw out the entire kaf. But what the Torah is telling me in Azoma is that those two eidim hamuzamim, eidim zomim, never saw the crime to begin with. They weren't there. They were imono yisim in a different place. Therefore, they never were part of the kaf eidim. And when the Torah says Vasisim lo kasher zolam, the Torah is saying treat them as if they were eidim, but in fact we don't believe they were an eidim. We believe the second pair of eidim azimim, and they weren't there at all to see the crime. If they weren't there and they're not eidim, they don't link up to the kad ha-eidim, and we don't apply the principle of nim tse echad mem karv upos. So it's interesting that now we have machlokas between Rashi and the Ramban. Rashi's position is that once you're mazim part of the kat, the entire kat gets thrown out under the law of kat of nimsek and karv apostle. And the Ramban's of the opinion that that would apply in any other kind of psul other than eidim zomim. Eidim zomim is the exception to the rule, because in eidim zomim they weren't there to begin with and they weren't part of the kat. Okay. The Mishnah says, Rav Yossi Omer, Li'olam einei rogim ad shiyu shnei edov masrim bo. The edim have to give a hasra. Shenemar al pishnayim edim. Al pishnayim edim means based on the peh of the edim, and the peh here indicates the hasra, we can put the criminal to death. But we must have a hasra from the edim. The edim, in order to qualify, have to give a hasra. Only Rav Popol Abaye. How could it be possible that Rav Yossi made such a statement? Mi islay le Rav Yossi hay svara? Is that really true? For Tanan, we have a Mishnah later on in Masechta Makis, Taftes Amid Beis. Rav Yossi Omer, Hasone Nerag Mipnei Shehu Kimuad Umusra. What this means is that according to Rav Yossi, in the case of a sone, and someone's considered an enemy, the Gemara goes through a whole discussion, how do you objectively define someone as a sone? They didn't speak for 30 days, whatever the case is. If this sone comes to testify against his sanu, right, against his enemy, then we don't trust him. I'm sorry, one second. I made a mistake. Just give me one second to clear my brain. I'm sorry. Okay, let's go back. If the sone murders his sanu, and then after the edim testify, he, the murderer, claims that he did it b'shogeg, inadvertently, is Nerak. Now, what does that mean, Nerak? Was there a Hasra or was there no Hasra? The whole purpose of Hasra is to determine that a person is amazing, he's deliberate, he's well thought out, he knows what he's doing, he realizes that he's about to commit a crime for which he's punished in the whatever the punishment might be in that crime. So, what does this mean, Nerag? What's the chiddush here? Says Rabbi Yossi, "Mipnei shehu kimuad umusra." What do you mean, kim musra? Was there asra? Was there no asra? Apparently, there was no asra. So, despite the fact that there was no asra, it's as if he violated asra. Why? Because in the case of Sony, we have no doubt that what? That he was amazing. He was not a shogeg. Again, let's go over our principles. So you can make a syllogism out of this. The purpose of Hasra is to distinguish between mazid and shogeg. Therefore, if we know about someone that he was definitely amazing, there's no necessity for Hasra. It's completely superfluous. Premise number three, a sone who kills his enemy definitely did it b'mezid. He didn't slip on a banana peel and fall from a high ledge and kill someone. It was deliberate. And even if it looks a little bit fishy, maybe it wasn't deliberate, but he made it look like it was b'shogeg, but it was really b'mezid. Says Rav Yossi, in such a case, we'll put him to death, even though there was no hasra, because harehu kimusra v'yome. It's as if he had asra.
Does it go against the rule of Mahatzel? You're basically assuming that because he was hated, and therefore...
Okay, so that's something Aaron will have to take up when we get to the sugi Rav Yossi. But what do you see here about Rav Yossi?
Can we inquire on
it? Exactly. We can put someone to death with that asra. Because that's exactly what Rav Yossi is postulating here. In this particular case, the Aiden did not give him asra. They only testified on the act of murder. We're going to put him to death despite the absence of Hasra, because we already know the answer to Hasra. Namely, we know that he was amazing. But wait a second. You also have to know that he committed murder. Man, we don't accept his self-incrimination, his confession. So it must be that you're going to put him to death based on two Aiden, but the Aiden didn't give Hasra. See, you could have argued, wait a minute, maybe the Aiden don't have to give Asra, even according to Rav Yossi, if we don't need Asra. But the Gemara assumes the following, that since Rav Yossi derives his conclusion from a verse, it says, Al Pishnayim Aiden, and P means Hasra, that the Aiden have to give Asra. That's an absolute rule that cannot be broken. In our lingo, we would call it Gzeres Hakos. The Torah decreed that an aid, in order to qualify as such, has to give a hasra. So the meaningfulness of hasra then is not simply it's a requirement in order to achieve the goal. It's a means to an end to determine that the criminal was made that he was deliberate. No! Even if I know that he was deliberate, nevertheless, in order to get Edom, the Edom could only become Edom if and when they gave Hasra. So Rav Yossi has to impose a Hasra straight across the board in absolutely every case, even in the case of a Sone, even if we know he's amazing. So again, the statement that a Sone doesn't need Hasra, he's Kimus Rav Yom because we know he was amazing, would make sense if we understood that Hasra is just a technicality, it's a mechanics in order to determine beyond the shadow of a doubt that he was amazing. No, if you have other ways, other means of achieving that goal, you can substitute and drop the requirement of Hasra. But now the Rav Yossi says, name, Hasra is not just to clarify the nature of the act and the deliberate nature of the criminal act, but rather Hasra is a requirement in order to set up Edim, then it becomes Gzeres HaKosuv. And even in the case of Sone, where we don't need the Hasra to clarify and establish beyond the shadow of a doubt that he was amazing, we know he's amazing, nevertheless we still have to require Hasra. The statement of Rabbi Yossi on Daf Tes regarding a Sone could only make sense if a Hasra is just simply coming from Shemayim. Remember, it could come from a shade, we discussed. You know, it could be that the Harug himself gave the Hasra before he got knocked off. And all that we discussed, because the Hasra is just that it's a matter of a technical methodology through which we clarify that it was amazing. Then it makes sense that in the case of Sonia, we could obviate the need for a Hasra. But if Rabbi Yossi postulates there's a separate halach of Hasra, and it's a Gzeres HaKosuv that's derived from a pasuk, how could Rabbi Yossi therefore drop that requirement in the case of a sonu? And once again, the Gemara does not have a resolution to this question, other than to say that there were two Rabbi Yossis. And the Gemara says, Amar Le Abai, he turns to Rav Papa and he says, Ha-hu, this Rabbi Yossi that's mentioned in the Mishnah Daf Tes about a sonu, that's not our Rav Yossi and our Mishnah. Our Rav Yossi is Rav Yossi ben Chalafta. But that Rav Yossi is Rav Yossi bar Yehudi. To Sanya, and I'll prove it to you from a Braisa. Rav Yossi bar Yehuda omer chaver, that is a Tamil Chacham, ein tzarech hasra. Lefish lo nitna hasra el lahavtin ben shogig umezit. Rav Yossi, the son of Yehuda, is the Rav Yossi who holds that the purpose of Hasra is nothing more than technical. It's just a methodology. It's a means to an end to determine whether he's Mazin and Shogeh. And therefore, we can drop the requirement of Hasra whenever we feel it's unnecessary because we know he was amazing. For example, in the case of a Sonei, or in the case of a Chaver, a Talmud Chacham, in both of those scenarios, we know he was Mazin. He's aware of the law. He knows the repercussions of the law. And therefore, there's no need to give him a Hasra. You know, in America, they have this phrase, I plead the fifth, you know. You know, some people say, well, I was ignorant of the law. Now, in some cases, there are really objective reasons for being ignorant of the law, so to speak. You know, in traffic violations, it's very common. I think maybe in this country even more than other countries, where the situations are so ambiguous. You know, you really can't tell whether you're allowed to park, you're not allowed to park, you're allowed to take a left turn, you have to come to a full... It's not, you know, always crystal clear. And therefore, although the law here is very strict, you know, they don't have much rachmanis here, which I found out to remember my family. It wasn't myself. It could have been me, that's true. But I would have probably also misread the same, same sign. But they don't have much compassion for you. You know, they throw the law at you, and they take pictures of you, and the whole nine yards. But technically, you could have situations in which you're not aware of the law. In the case of a mezid, in the case of a chaver, the premise is he's aware of the law. In the case of a sone, he's also mezid because he hates this guy. He didn't, like we say, slip and fall from a high roof and kill the guy on his way down. So therefore, this is the sheet of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, not to be confused with our Rabbi Yossi. Our Rabbi Yossi has an entirely different definition and understanding of what Hasra is all about. Hasra is not a means to an end. Hasra is a prerequisite of becoming an aid and making you, giving you the ability and the authority and the power to testify in Beis Din. That's an absolute rule. It's going to apply even in the case of a Sone, even in the case of a Tamukha. But here the Ritva asks the Gevaldige Kash. Fek the Ritva, I don't understand. You're telling me that a Chaver doesn't need a Hasra. What's a Chaver? He knows all the laws. Great. But how do you know he wasn't a Shogig? Meaning, the issue of Mazin and Shogig is not just a question of ignorance of the law or knowledge of the law. The question of Mazin and Shogeg touches on whether he was aware of the repercussions of his actions. He didn't know that he was about to commit a crime. He didn't know that if he does X, somebody's going to die because of it. How do you know he was Mazin? And therefore, the Ritva comes up with a sensational chiddush. But really, it's poshut when you think about it. He's got to be right. There's no other way out, I don't think. If anyone wants to argue with this Ritva, please come forward and do so. But I challenge you to argue with his logic. Says the Ritva that when Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says that Chaver Eino Tzorach Hasra, he's talking about a Chaver who's a Sone. Because if he's not a Sone, then you still don't know if he was deliberate in the action. You know that he understood the nature of the act as a criminal act, but you don't know if in this particular case he killed him deliberately or he killed him inadvertently. But now that we combine Sone and Talmud Chacham into one, and you might ask me a question, well, how can Talmud Chacham have a Sone, be a Sone, right? So the Gemara actually discusses that in a few places. But be that as it may, if he's a Sone and he's a Talmud Chacham, then you cover both bases. Number one, you know that he was deliberate in the action. He's a Sone. He didn't just fall off a roof and slip over the ledge. Number two, you know that he's aware of the nature of the criminal act and its punishment because he's a Chaver. And therefore, there's no need for Hasra. The only thing that bothers me about this Ritva is that, like, why doesn't it say it explicitly? We have to wait for the Ritva to say it.
Does the person need to make a claim that he was Shogeg? Or even if he remained silent, the court would...
That's an interesting question. In other words, we said that self-incrimination is unacceptable in a Jewish court, but is this self-incrimination? You know, maybe we say we have the evidence against him. He has the opening to say I was a Shogeg. Does he, by closing that gap, incriminate himself, or the incrimination is already inherent in the facts and things? I don't know.
Because if so, it's much simpler. Just for the cover case where he's saying, did you know the gun killed? Like, yeah, but I didn't know. If that's a case where he says, yeah, but I didn't know it was Oster. It's like, well, we don't believe him because he's a cover. And the Sonnen said, well, you know, obviously I would have wanted to kill him, but I wasn't trying to kill anyone. I was dispelled. It's like, oh, we don't believe him. So in both cases, person already closed one of the doors.
Right. So that's what you have to know. I don't know exactly what the law is in that case. Okay, let's go on in the Mishnah. The Mishnah closes with the words Dover Acher. In other words, I'm going to offer you an alternative interpretation of Al Pi Shnayim Edim, and that is that it's got to come directly from the mouths of the witnesses into the ear, and here I mean just not just Heron, but their Heron, you know, to understand what the Edim are saying. The Dayan has to hear. Shelo tehei Sanhedrin shomas mipi haTurgamon. And we gave various explanations, if you recall, why Turgamon is a problem. Could it be because we don't trust the Turgamon to be absolutely reliable and accurate? Could it be because if you don't understand the Edim, you won't be able to interrogate them properly? Or could it be because it becomes aid me p8, if you remember that discussion that we had?
Does it have to be verbal?
And it has to be verbal.
So
correct. So there are two witnesses that it has to
be. Sign language would be no good.
Sign language? That's an interesting question. I don't know.
There's a recent tshuva that was written about weddings between people who sign, where the signing is considered as
right. As if he asked them to get married and hurry up expeditiously. I see, right here. You know, here in this country, they're very sensitive to that. You know, you see that they have.
I just accepted that truth.
Who accepted the tshuva?
The chief rabbi. The Benny wrote the tshuva.
I see. Okay. I would also be inclined to say that that hand communication is meaningful. But in this case, what we're talking about is a verbal statement, and it's in a foreign language. Now, if the Sanhedrin knows all the languages, great. But if they don't, then they cannot judge the case because they can't hear the Eidim. They hear it physically, but they don't know what the Eidim is saying. And the Gemara tells the following story. Hanu laze, mi loshon laz. Laz is any language other than loshon kodesh. The asu l'kami de rova. Rava in this case presided as the judge. Uke rava turgum beinayim. And guess what? Rava didn't understand their language. And he set up a turgum on. And that was the case, and that actually happened. The hechi ovid hachi. How did Rava get away with this? Vatnan, don't we have a Mishnah? Shalote heyas Sanhedrin shomas mipi haturgamon, that they have to hear it directly and they have to understand his language. Now, this is very strange. How did Rava allow this to go on? By the way, the impression you get here is that Rava was judging what kind of case? Mom. Yeah, but this is not a Dina Nefashis case. And we're not talking about Sanhedrin. You know, we go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah speaks about Sanhedrin. Apparently, that's Lav Dafka. And this halacha shalotei Sanhedrin shamas v'turgon applies even in dini mamonos. And the reason is simple: because if in dini mamonos you need the testimony of two witnesses, you got to interrogate them. You've got to hear what they say, and it's got to be direct. And Rav is presiding as the dayan in dini mamonos. He has to hear the eidim directly, and if he doesn't know the language, he can't set up a miturgam on it. So how did Rav accept this turgam? And by the way, the pasuk itself, which the Mishnah quotes, al pishnayim eidim yakum davar, to derive the conclusion shalotei sanhedrin shomas mipiyam turgamon, that pasuk is indeed talking about dini mamonos, right? Yakum davar is dini mamonos. So there's no question that the word Sanhedrin in this Mishnah is a bit confusing, and I don't understand why Rebbe, when he wrote this Mishnah, he confused me. I thought he was talking about a Sanhedrin, and I was waiting for the Gemara to say, "Lo v'amed v'amur v'dinei dinei nefashis and not v'dinei mamonos," but that's not true. So Sanhedrin is lav dafka. I don't know why Rebbe chose the word Sanhedrin.
We've already linked them up now.
Mishpat echad yelach. No, but again, the word Sanhedrin, you know, it doesn't apply to a Bezin Shal Shlosha, which is sufficient, three judges for Dini Mominus, is not called the Sanhedrin. You know, Sanhedrin Gdola of 71, Sanhedrin Ketan of 23, but we don't have a Sanhedrin in the case of three judges presiding over Dini Mominus. So it's funny that the Mishnah used the word Sanhedrin. You know, I would have...
Perhaps that's to imply that all the judges need to understand it, not just one of them, or two of them.
Okay, but why use the word Sanhedrin? That's what I don't understand. All right, it's just my own musings.
There's an assumption maybe that to be on Sanhedrin, you have to know all the languages, and all of a sudden you have a language you don't understand.
Right. Rava meida havi yoda, meida havi ami. So Gemara answers, you know what the case was? It's not the way we understood it, that Rava didn't understand what they were saying. Yeah, so why didn't he set up a miturgon just to confuse us? He says, Vadure hu delo havi yoda. Interesting. And this is so common in our contemporary society. You have so many people who comprehend the language, they can't speak it. So in this case, the problem was not that Rava couldn't understand the Eidim. The problem was in the reverse. The Eidim couldn't understand Rava, the Dayan. In other words, when he would interrogate them and ask them questions and fire questions at them, they didn't know what he was talking about. They didn't understand his language. They were lost in the sense that they didn't know Lashon Kodesh. So Rava set up a miturgamon, and his goal was to convey to the Eidim exactly what he was asking. However, Rabosai, take a look at Rabbeinu Chananel. It's the next to the last line on your page. Rabbeinu Chananel says, Hanu lo azei diosel kami de Rava bedina. Do you know what he means by diosel kami de Rava bedina? What does it mean they came in front of Rav for a din?
They weren't witnesses at all.
Right. These were the Balei Dinim. The Ritva says that He found the same pshat in the Ramah, Reish Mem He, who's one of the Gdolei Rishonim and the Sephardic Rishonim. But the Ritva says, Das Rabosenu, what he heard from his Rebbeim, he said, Din ze shel turgum alo nemar el b'yedin. And those who came in front of Rav were Eden. So this Shita of Rabbeinu Chananel, which is also the Shita of the Ramah, is postulating that even with regard to the language spoken by the litigants in front of the Dayanim, there's no possibility of a Meturgamon. Now, if we're dealing with the psul of Meturgamon under Eid Mipa, this makes no sense, it doesn't get off the ground. But if, on the other hand, the issue is trying to understand, trying to interrogate, then there is a halacha that the Dayanim have to ask questions to the Balei Dinim in order to clarify exactly what their claim is. But again, it's a much weaker argument to say that there's a psul in Meturgamon in the case of Balei Dinim, because the Dayan doesn't understand the language of the Balei Dinim. I mean, do the Balei Dinim, what? The
Pasuk doesn't say that.
And the Pasuk is talking about Eidus. Yeah, you're right. So I'm just pointing out that this Rabbeinu Chananel, which is also quoted in the Ritva, the name of the Ramah, is a Tzarech Iyud. It's something that needs further clarification. Good. So I think we're ready to move on to Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. That's good. Can't say we'll make a seam on the Perek tonight, but maybe next week. Gemara tells the following story. This is what's called Eide Halva. So it means that Reuven sues Shimon in a court of law for $1,000, we'll say, because Shimon borrowed $1,000. And two Eidim come in to testify on the Halva. The Gemara tells us a story about these two Eidim. Ilah Vitovio. Okay, these were the Eidim. And they testified that Reuven extended a loan to Shimon. Were they related to Reuven? No. Were they related to Shimon? No. So what's the problem? Krive di Arvahava. There's a third guy by the name of Levi. Levi's a cosigner. His Arvus, which he self-accepted upon himself, goes the following, that if in event that Shimon defaults on the loan, we, or I, will pay. Now these two witnesses who are testifying that Shimon in fact owes Reuven $1,000, they were not krovim, neither to Reuven the Malva, nor to Shimon the Lova, but they were krovim to the Arev. And in effect, therefore, since they're related to Levi the Arev, not directly, but at least indirectly, their Eidus is relevant to Levi as well, to their Karov. So can we accept their Eidus as far as Alva is concerned, when the implication may in fact be, again, depending upon whether Shimon can pay back the Chov or not, Levi will now have to pay. And these Eidim are Krovim of Levi. Savar of Popol of Memer, of Popol thought the logic of it is, Gabi Lova v'malva rechiki ninhu, since these two gentlemen are not related to the Malva nor to the Lova, therefore, there's no psul kurva. We can rely on the Eidus of Ilah v'tuvia. That was Rav Papa's opinion. Amalei Rav Huna Berei the Rav Yoshua Rav Papa. How can you possibly accept these two witnesses? Iles leil lova. If the lova does not have money to pay, lav. This is a rhetorical question. Lav basar arva zil malva. Won't the malva come and collect from the ariv? And therefore, it turns out that it's quite possible that your edus ilah v'tovya is of great relevance to the Arif. And since you're crowing to the Arif, therefore you should be possible. That's, I believe, the simple pshat in the sugya. And I think that's what you'll find in Rashi. Rashi says, Ilah v'tuvya, edi alva havu krovim el Arif. And that seems to be, in a simple way, a nutshell of what this sugya is all about. And here's where the Ramban becomes very antagonistic, and he doesn't understand what's going on. If these two Edim are testifying on the Halva, then, says the Ramban, Rav Papa is clearly correct, and Rav Huna is not. Because there are two different issues here, says the Ramban. And we need an Edus relevant to both issue number one, we'll call it, and issue number two. What are the two issues, Rav Osa?
Does Reuven or Shimon and his Levi the Erev?
Well, there's no question that Levi's the Erev, but does Levi owe Reuven? In other words, there's one issue here that's a din Torah between two litigants to determine if he's chayv, if he's potter, between Reuven and Shimon. That's the malva d'lova. There's another issue regarding to the Erev. But why, says the Rabban, can we not accept this edus of Ilah v'Tovia with regard to the malva d'lova and forget about the Erev? You know, you want to, if Reuven wants to sue the Erev, so let him bring two Edom to support his claim against the Erev. But right now, there's a claim of Reuven against Shimon. So at least in terms of the Kashrus HaEdus vis-a-vis Shimon, Ilah v'Tovia should be absolutely reliable. And the Ramban goes very far. He says that the issue about the claim against Shimon and the issue about the claim against Levi as an Erev are two separate Edios. And it's almost as if you would have two Edom testifying about a halva, and then a different two Edom that are testifying about an arvus. Those are two separate Edios. And if in the case of one pair of Edom want to testify on both the halva and the arvus, they have to be krovim of the Arev. So their testimony is a separate independent testimony of the Arev, and we cannot accept them, they're krovim. But why does that impinge on their ability to qualify as Edom against the Lova? Says the Ramban, this has nothing to do with the sugya of Palgin and Dibura. Do you remember Rav Osa said that 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, whenever it was, we discussed at great length the sugya in Sanhedrin Daf Tes of Palgin and Dibura. A man comes to testify, Ploni Ravani Lertzoni. Meaning that I was a willing accomplice to this crime of revenge. And the Gemara says that even though he can't testify in himself as the Nirva, he can testify against, together with someone else, against the Rovea. Why? Palgina Dibura. We only accept his edus vis-a-vis the Rovea, we don't accept it vis-a-vis the Nirva. Says the Ramban, that sugya applies because there's one act of revenge. And there are two participants in that act. They have to be. Now you want to know, can I split their edus in half, take half of it and drop the other half? And that's the principle of Palgin and Dibura. Says Ramban, in our case, we don't even have to come on to Palgin and Dibura. Because we have two separate independent edus. So before we see the Ramban's interpretation of this sugya as an alternative, let's just spend a few minutes trying to defend Rashi. Why does Rashi feel that Rav Huna is right, and he's got the final word, and these two gentlemen are disqualified, completely disqualified for this edus? And the answer mathematically has to be that there's only one edus. Meaning, the Ramban's premise, he's operating with the principle of two edus. And Rashi must be operating with the principle that's one edus. Again, why you don't apply Palgina Dibura, we'll have to figure it out. But in any event, it's one Eidos. So what are they arguing now? Is this two Eidos? Is it one Eidos?
I think if you call it cases, it comes out better. Not Eidos.
Okay.
Rashi says it's one case. And Ramban says there are two cases. One case is simply, did he lend them the money? So the answer is yes. So then, how do you pay back the money? He has the money, he doesn't have the money. The Eruv gets involved. That's the second case. It's the second issue.
So according to Rashi, the testimony is on the lending, on the halva. Correct? How many halvas were there? One. Is the male is only one case, as you call it. That's one indivisible edus on the halva. If he's possible with regard to this halva, because he's a karov, Because this halva in Jen is two different implications, two different repercussions, two different chiyuvim, but there's one indivisible edus on one maisa halva. Was there a chiyuv? Was there not a chiyuv? And the answer is, you can't testify on such halva, because that halva involves a chiyuv on the lover Shimon, and potentially on the Arev Levi. You're a karev to Levi. But the Ramban is claiming that the Avis is not on the halva. What's the Avis on? The chiyuv. How many chiyuvim are there? Two different chiyuvim. Therefore, the Ramban postulates that these are shtei avios. There's one chiyuv which is engendered by Shimon because he took the money. There's another chiyuv on Levi the Ari because that's engendered by the fact that he self-imposed with a kinyan his arvus. So basically, there are two gavras, two chiyuvim, two machayvim, and therefore the two avios. You want to testify in the halva? That's fine. You want to testify in the chiyuv of the Arev? That's fine also, except that you're apostle because you're Karo. But that's an entirely different testimony. Says Rashi, no. The testimony is on the halva, and there's one halva. That halva is relevant to, it splinters off with two branches and two machayvim on two different gavras, but the halva itself is one, and it's an indivisible unit. Okay. Says the Ramban, I have a different shot in the sugya. And the Ramban quotes the Ravid. The Ravid, which appears in his commentary on the Rif, says that the Edom are not testifying on the Halva, but rather, everybody agrees there was Halva, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, but Shimon, the Lova, claims Parati. I paid up the halva. Two Edom testify, Lo Para. Now, how did two Edom know that he didn't pay up the loan? Well, are they tied down to him, you know, with the handcuffs? Yom of Elila? No. So the Gemara has a case, this is elsewhere in Shas, where they heard a Hodas Baldin from the Lova that he didn't pay up the loan. And by the way, it might not be a bad idea for a Malfa before he goes in to make a claim against the Lova that he get two Edom to hear from the mouth of the Lova, again, if the Lova is honest enough, that he didn't pay back the loan. And those two Edom now run into business and they testify lo parat. What is the Ravid gain by? Says the Ravid, Edom me'idim sheshimon hoda b'fneim shelo para. So Rav Papa thought that we should rely on the testimony of Ilah Vitovya. They heard, and are testifying to that effect, that they heard an admission from the Lova that he didn't pay. They're testifying against the Lova. What do you want? Why aren't they kosher? They're not related to the Lova. Al kach omalo Rav Huna. May Akar Vim Ain Mos Lalova Nifra Hamalvimina Oriv Nimsa Shabedu Zu Machaivim Haidim Afes Haorav Shahu Krovam. What does the Ravid gain, and why does the Ramban appreciate the Ravid above and beyond the Pshat of Rashi? Why is the Ravid's Pshat a protection against the kasha, the onslaught of the Ravid, of the Ramban against Rashi?
The Arev case, the case of the Arev, is always a question of whether or not the loan was paid back.
Exactly. In the case of Edus on the Halva, in other words, if Shimon is denying that he ever borrowed the money and the two Edom say, we saw the Halva, there the Ramban says very well. You can absolutely separate two Adios here. There's one Adios on Alva vis-a-vis the Lova. There's another Adios about the Arev. Was he Makabal on himself, Arvus, etc., etc. But if the testimony is in a case where everybody agrees that there was a Halva, everybody agrees there was an Arev. Less about the public, that's not an issue. The question is whether the Lova indeed paid up. That is relevant directly to the Arev, and that's one Adios. Says the Ramban, in this case, where the Edus is on E. Piron, right, Lo Paran, you cannot apply even the principle of Palgin and Dibura. Palgin and Dibura makes sense in the case of Roveh and Nirva, because the aegis is on a criminal who is being condemned in front of a Beis Din. If there are two criminals, each one who are being accused of a crime, so then you could say Palgin and Dibura believe the aid vis-a-vis one criminal, and not vis-a-vis the other criminal. But in a case where there's an aedus on one action of Epiron, again I call it an action, it's really the absence of an action, but Epiron is indivisible. Either you believe him that he heard from the Lova that there was no Piron, or you don't believe him from that when he heard from the Lova that there was no Piron. And that's relevant to both the Lova and the Arif simultaneously. That is one indivisible aedus, and even Palgin and Dibura won't apply. Whereas Rav Papa thought in his Havamina, well, all he's saying is that the Lova owes the Malva, because I heard him make that confession, say he loved the Tuvia. I heard him in front of us, he confessed that he didn't pay back, so therefore he's Chayav. Who cares about the Arif? Comes along Rav Huna, and he says, what do you mean who cares about the Arif? Well, there is an Arif. That's undeniable, not unquestionable. Now the question is, did the Lova pay or did he not pay? And the answer is that these Eidim are testifying that the Lova defaulted on his loan, therefore there's an absolute automatic chiyuv on the part of the Arev to pay up for that absolute. Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here.
All right.